All right, well, I guess it's, I have now about three after, so in the, you know, in the interest of not running too late, why don't we get going? I'll just welcome everybody to tonight's session of our PPS Mentor Teleclass series. We're very lucky to have with us tonight Paul Cech Jr., who is going to be talking with us about movement that matters, incorporating health-building movements without going to the gym. For those of you who are joining us for the first time, Paul is a holistic coach and owner of the Ashland, Oregon-based Cech Holistic Studio. He's helped people from all walks of life set and achieve their personal and professional goals. To learn more about Paul and the services he offers, I invite you to visit his mentoring page located in the PPS mentoring section of our website at ppssuccess.com. Now, I know Paul is looking forward to an interactive call tonight, and so am I, and I think that will make for a great teleclass. But I do want to remind everybody that's with us tonight that we record these calls. So if you happen to be in a high-traffic area or if you're on a cell phone that might pick up some echo effects, you can mute your phone line by pressing *6. And then if you want to join in the conversation, you can unmute your phone at any time by pressing any button on your phone pad. So with all that stuff out of the way, welcome, Paul. It's great to have you
with us. Thank you, James. It's always a pleasure, and thanks to everybody who's tuning in on this call. I look forward to hearing from you if you have anything to say. I'm going to pretty much have just a more of a loose, free-form time of it this time, so if you guys have questions or comments, just jump in, and I really do. I'm at my best when I'm interactive, so however that happens, I'm happy. So today's talk is a little bit different than the title. So I'm going to talk a little bit more about the lifestyle aspects of movement and building movement into the lifestyle and what the effect of movement is on physiology, and so probably cover a couple of the myths about movement and exercise too. So really, we are beings of motion. I mean, if there's any hallmark to consciousness, it's attached to a vehicle of motion. Otherwise, it doesn't really have a whole lot of ways of referencing itself. It can't challenge something and be challenged by something else, and that's movement. So if you look at our whole history, all the way back as far as you can go, I mean, our modern history just goes to this little brief period of about 10,000 years, and then we don't know what happens before that. But even if you look at just the 10,000 years that we have clearly available to us, you can see that we are beings of movement. I mean, if you look at the Semitic peoples, the first Indo-Europeans, these are nomadic people. These are people who follow animals around seasonally. So that first notion right there should give you all an indicator, if you probably already know that, that we are geared to move. If you want to say evolution, if you want to say design, it doesn't matter, but movement is the norm for the human body. And it's clearly not the norm today. So we're going to have to figure out a way to bridge the gap between what we have been doing for all of recorded history and what we're doing in this present time of extreme novelty, of extreme change and transformation. There's a lot of great things happening in the world, but there, as you guys know, following health statistics and other statistics and trends, there's also some downsides to the modern mode of existence. So just to recap on, just to give you an example, oil really changed everything. The ability to have free energy or cheap energy and the ability to machine parts and make tools that use that energy really displaced almost everything we've ever used our body for. We're almost to the point with modern technology where our body just exists to carry our brain around, so that our brain can go talk with other brains in different seated environments. I mean, it's gotten to the point where we almost have no need for this musculoskeletal system. I mean, if you could just pull the brain out and put it in a cyborg, most people would at this point. But that's not sustainable. That's not something that is healthy, and that's been shown out in the facts. The obesity rates, arthritis rates, pretty much all degenerative disease has skyrocketed in the past century. And that trend corresponds directly with the change in the use of body and, of course, the change in the diet, which is also associated with the change in the use of our body. So really what we're seeing is converging trends. One trend on the upslope is the use of energy And then the trend on the downslope is the use of body. So we've really replaced body with cheap energy. And I'm not going to go into why that's problematic long-term for society, for everything else, but I'm going to say for the body, it's one of the last things that you want to do. Now, it's true that historically our the demands on our body from our environment could have been pretty high at times. I mean, if you had to build a house and you were an Alaskan or a West Coast Canadian Indian around the turn of the 17th century, you would have had to fell every tree, you would have had to have hand barked every tree, you would have had to have placed every branch in position with you and your friends. So clearly, there's a difference. I mean, I could go on from how we catch our fish, prepare our fish, to food. Produce and everything else. But the bottom line is, if you look at almost every aspect of society, every single one, it's been displaced by machines and cheap energy. So one of the first keys to our success in general, before I explain what movement does to the body, I just want to give you one general concept which you can just run away with. You don't need to know anything except for this one thing. If you can use less energy every single day, the odds that you're going to use your body and improve the health of your body through its use goes up. So every drop of oil, every drop of natural, or every, you know, cc of natural gas that you don't use, you're probably going to find yourself using your body. Now, some people might dread that concept. Oh, I'm not going to go back to washing my clothes on a washboard and beating them and then hang drying them. But there's going to be a middle ground there. You could probably still wash your clothes, but I would suggest you taking the 5 minutes or 10 minutes to hang drying the clothes. Just literally hang drying the clothes for 10 minutes would be like standing on a cardio machine at a low intensity and pumping away. The difference is you're going to be in fresh air and surrounded by nature with beautiful smells and trees and likely anyways. So just that one concept, if you could just displace energy use with movement, you would find it all throughout. We can extend this into cooking, for example. Most people go to their car, jump in their car, go to the restaurant, sit down, order, eat, sit down in their car, return home, sit again. If we could just walk to the store and buy prepared food, that would be a first step. The second step would be to walk to the store and buy food that we then come home and prepare. So every step that we can remove energy, we're actually going to use our body more. And cooking is one of the best ways to get movement into your lifestyle because it's rhythmic. You have to chop your vegetables. It's meditative in a way. You're thinking about the preparation of the dish, how you want it to taste. Just something as simple as cooking your own meal can be a really great first step into increasing the movement in your life. Other things, which I'm going to get into, I'll get into more of the details later, but what I want to cover now is a bit more of the physiology of what movement does to the body, or the lack of movement. Most people don't know that this body actually needs to be in motion in order for it to move all of its fluids properly. Most people don't have any clue that literally walking helps digestion, for example. Or literally cooking the food in the kitchen before you eat it is going to help you digest that food. They don't get that. And the reason they don't get it is because they don't understand what's called imbibition. Imbibition is derivative of the word imbibe, which means to pump in or to pump. So basically, imbibition occurs in the body when you contract your muscles, and the fascial envelopes around those muscles get distorted and pulled out of shape or pulled out of the resting shape. And when they get distorted, they compress other organs such as lymph nodes. So literally by just walking or just doing simple breathing exercises or simple qigong or tai chi exercises, this is not exercise. This is just literally slow motion, just like, you know, Matrix time, slow motion moves, if you guys have seen The Matrix. You know, literally that alone, just doing little slow moves can help pump lymph, cerebral spinal fluid, and help circulatory flow. And most importantly, rhythmic, cyclical movements such as walking, or really any repeated low-intensity movement helps nourish and hydrate the spinal discs. There's two particular surfaces and structures in your body that are really, really need movement. And the primary one are your spinal discs. They really don't have hardly any blood flow to them. So the only way that they get hydrated, they get nourished and taken care of is through the process of imbibition, which again is repetitive, rhythmic motions. And it can be anything. It could be grabbing an egg shaker like this. And you could literally just stand there for 3 or 4 minutes and just, to the radio, shake your arms, shake your legs, just walk around, do a little shake. It doesn't even matter what it is, as long as it's rhythmic. Walking, shaking, taking deep breaths in and out, doing breathing squats. I mean, you can go through my dad's book, How to Eat, Move, and Be Healthy, to get examples of some exercises there. But it doesn't matter. You got to just move. And that is going to hydrate the disc. It's also going to hydrate the synovium of the joint. So a lot of people will with hip issues, like hip capsule issues, will actually improve the state of their hip literally just through walking. Why? Because that rotation and twist in the hip capsule repetitively actually pumps into the capsule more fluid. So every time you step on the leg, it goes through its twist and extension phase, and then you decompress that leg and it returns back to its initial position. Every single time that happens, you get a wave of pumping, or you get one cycle of pumping. So a lot of people are suffering from weird symptoms because they are not pumping enough. They're not using pumping motions. And symptoms can include headaches. It can include worsening digestion, chronic pain, really everything, even things like edema and circulatory flow in the extremities can be markedly improved by just simple increases in repetitive motion throughout the day. Swiss balls are great for this. One thing I recommend to a lot of people is to buy my dad's DVD, Better Abs, Buns, and Backs, Swiss Ball Exercises for Better Abs, Buns, and Backs. And in that DVD, right in the beginning, there's a beautiful stretching routine, which is low intensity. It's not challenging. It's not hard. It's not going to make you tired. But what it does do is it puts your body through all the primal rotation and extension and flexion patterns in the body. And if there's one thing I could get you guys to do besides replacing units of energy with movement would be to just literally get on a Swiss ball, get on the floor, and move your spine through its full range of motion, into extension, into flexion, into rotation left, rotation right, and do it repetitively, at least 50 reps, up to 100 reps. But it only takes a few minutes to do that. But just a couple of times a day of these little mini cycles of repetitive movement can really make a difference in chronic joint issues, headaches, digestion, all kind of arthritic symptoms. You'd be surprised what a little bit of pumping throughout the day can do to your health. So I encourage you all to give that a shot if you're sitting as much as I do. And I really understand what motion does because I sit a lot. And I've had a bunch of injuries in my life, so I am very sensitive to how much pumping it takes me just to feel comfortable. And it takes about 3 times a day of me moving for about 15 minutes. And again, it doesn't really matter how I'm moving as long as it's low intensity and it's rhythmic, repetitive. Like I said, you can grab a shaker and just shake to the radio for a couple minutes, or you can lay on the ground and just do really flowy, kind of fishy motions where you're kind of just moving your spine. It really doesn't matter as long as you're pumping repetitively. So let's see, what did I miss on that part here? Cerebral spinal fluid. Another thing about motion, and particularly chronic pain, is that when you're in motion, your nervous system is getting flooded with what are called afferent signals, or signals that are flowing towards the spinal column, towards the central nervous system. And it's interesting because the signals that get sent to the nervous system always move faster and are received more strongly than the signals that get sent away from the nervous system, such as when you want to squeeze your hand. So when you decide to squeeze your hand, that's an efferent signal. That signal is a lot slower and less powerful, believe it or not, than the afferent signal. So people with chronic pain, by moving, by just literally going for a short walk, are flooding their nervous system with all kinds of information and sensation that come from the capsules of the joints, the muscles, the Golgi tendon organs, the Carpathian corpuscles, all kinds of mechanoreceptors begin to start sending information to the spine. On top of that, when you're walking, you're also getting the sensation on your skin of air moving past your hair. And believe it or not, that sounds funny, but that's a very powerfully relaxing sensation to the nervous system. So I know I'm getting really technical about walking, but simply walking can actually, it just through the neurologic properties of it, can turn down the chronic pain in your body. And it can be even chronic pain in your shoulder and your hands and wrists, because what's happening is you're actually being desensitized through the inputs that are coming into the nervous system. So there's so many different ways that repetitive motions such as walking and shaking and doing Tai Chi and Qigong and any number of systems can help you. Another thing that most people understand is that the colon is not designed to move the feces on its own. It's really not designed to be the primary mover of the feces. So actually what we're designed to do is to use squatting patterns and bending patterns to help aid in eliminating our stool. So a lot of people get backed up, they get constipated because they're sitting all day, and what that sitting does is it puts the sternum and the chest in a bad position. It depresses the sternum, it causes bad posture, forward head, which then compresses on the transverse colon, and it causes the feces to actually get resisted by sitting. So not only does the organ, rather the colon, have to do more work to push the feces, but it's actually being resisted by the position. So when you're walking and bending and pulling and twisting, those normal patterns of muscular contraction actually ripple through the colon and across the colon and move the feces up the ascending colon and help move it across the transverse colon and into the descending colon. So, again, most people don't realize that simple motions actually help digestion through their mechanical wave functions. The way the wave ripples through the organ actually helps motility. It helps move the stool. So, from bowel movements to circulatory flow to lymphatic to nervous system to psychological. I mean, how relaxing is it to do something repetitive? This is why religions, for example, are always doing rituals that require repetition. If you look at the dervishes and some of the older Far Eastern pre-Islamic traditions, they are doing dances where they're bouncing up and down and twirling around and doing very, very, very repetitive things for like 30, 40, 50 minutes to get into a trance state. The Buddhists will use Tibetan bowls, for example. They'll sit with a Tibetan bowl and they'll chant with it. And through the action of controlling the breath and pumping the diaphragm in a rhythmic extended fashion, they get very, very significant trance states. So you can really do a lot with repetitive motion, low intensity motion, everything from inducing meditative states to pinching a loaf, for lack of a better term. Mm-hmm. So go ahead, James.
No, I was just laughing.
So let's get back to building movement into the lifestyle. I've talked about imbibition and the fascial envelopes that help pump the lymph and et cetera. So you kind of have a little physiological background. You have a little idea what to do, but let's get a little bit more into the details. So at the office, let's start with the simple stuff. Okay, you're bound to your desk job. That's the fact. You're going to tell me this is my job, this is my career, I can't change. All right, I'm with you. So what we're going to do here is we're going to make your desk adjustable. I really, if you make more than $20,000 a year, you can afford to buy a monitor holder, which is adjustable. With just literally a quick pin release, you can move your monitor up and down. And then what you do is you get a matching adjustable chair. And then what you can do is, like, once or twice a day, you can just adjust the chair up six inches to 10 inches, adjust the monitor up. And what that does is it changes the position in which you're seated. It changes the position of the hips. It changes the position of the low back, thoracic spine, cervical spine, et cetera. So if you just move your static position throughout the day, just by changing static positions, you're going to reduce the detrimental effect of being stagnant or what's the technical word? Sedentary. That's the word I'm looking for, sedentary. Another technique you can do is you can get what's called a sit-fit or a Dura-Disc. These are sold at the Czech Institute. And you can stick them on a fixed chair, like a standard solid chair, non-adjustable. And what that allows you to do is, while you're at work, you can actually do pelvic rocking motions. You can rock your pelvis in circles. You can go left, right. You can go anterior, posterior, forward, back with the pelvis. But you could literally be sitting there reading the Wall Street Journal and doing pumping exercises. It's an excellent, simple, just deadly simple technique for a big effect. I mean, if you did an extra 150 pelvic tilts front and back a day, that would make a huge difference in your back pain. Most cases of back pain would notice an improvement with just like 100, 150 repetitions of extension, light extension and flexion while seated. Because what you're doing is you're basically mimicking walking while you're seated. Another technique is to actually grab a Swiss ball itself and bounce on the ball while you're doing your thing. Believe it or not, I can actually bounce and read my article. So you'll find that it's fun. You have less pain, and you don't have to do a whole lot. You don't have to go to the gym or anything. You can start right there with the Dura-Disc, Swiss ball, adjustable chair, adjustable monitor, and just keep basically changing your static position. It makes a big difference. Another thing you can do is just take 1 minute, 3 or 4 or 5 times a day. And, you know, if you're at a cubicle and you have a boss looking over your shoulder, just tell him, look, you know, I've had a couple injuries in my life, and it's important that I take 5 minutes throughout my work day to just do a little pumping exercise. So you get that clear. Nobody thinks you're a kook anymore. They understand that when you're, you know, stepping away from your office for a minute to whatever, either lay on the floor or just stand up, that you are doing it for a reason. So what you're going to do is you're going to get up, you're going to stand up, and you're going to start taking really deep but slow breaths through the belly. So and as you inhale, you're going to want to raise your arms out to the side, turn your palm up like your thumb is pointing back behind you, and you want to pull your chin back and straighten your posture up. And really just make yourself like, I can't think of a good image. But basically, as you inhale, chin comes back, posture straightens, arm extends, and then you exhale and you reverse and you go into a flexion and slump pattern. And you really exhale as far as you can go comfortably and turn your hands in, let your head drop, let your spine round, and repeat. And if you just do 15 to 20 of those in the course of 1 minute, full inhales, full exhales, without forcing it, either way, you're going to notice a big difference in how your spine feels throughout the day, because it doesn't take a lot of these dynamic pumping motions to get the imbibition effect to happen. So just stand up, get away from the office for just 1 minute. Just stand up, take 15, 20 deep, slow breaths accompanied with the extension and flexion pattern I mentioned. And you can also do rotation patterns. So inhale, look up and to the left. Exhale, down. Inhale, look up and to the right. Exhale, down, etc. It's not rocket science. It's just mechanical motion. You want to get more mechanical motion throughout the day, period. Okay, so deep belly breaths. Other things, like, you know, I know you can't stop driving your car because our cities are designed in a way where everything's too far apart for you to ride or walk efficiently. So the simplest thing to do in that case is to park as far away from the building as you can. And no parking lot is ever more than an eighth of a mile away from the destination at hand. So never, because they wouldn't do that. With our society, people wouldn't walk more than an eighth of a mile. So even if you park as far away as possible in the shopping mall you're at, you're still going to only walk probably 500 to 1,000 paces tops. So get that extra walking in. Park far away, walk there, walk back. When you're at the grocery store, don't take the shopping cart. Take the handheld cart. And if you're shopping properly, by the way, you should be shopping twice a week or even three times a week for fresh food. So you never need a big shopping cart when you shop, if you shop properly. So I always take a hand cart, and as I'm walking around the store, I'm getting this load. I'm getting a little exercise, getting the pumping effect. I switch arms, and I know this sounds Dr. Seuss, but it makes a huge difference. I mean, walking instead of, don't park in front, carry your groceries by hand instead of pushing them around. It sounds dumb, but it's significant. Riding your bike, most people live close enough to the sort of recreational and shopping points where they can ride their bike there. I ride my bike almost everywhere now. I wasn't in shape, I wasn't comfortable. Now it's like I feel uncomfortable driving because it's like I just realize how much energy I'm wasting to do that, how little I get out of it. I mean, I actually kind of feel gluttonous at this point in my life when I drive to places that I could easily ride my bike or walk to. So try and get in the habit of doing that. Again, I mentioned cooking. Cooking is an excellent source of repetitive motion. You can cook too much and get carpal tunnel, like I did when I was 16 as a pizza chef, but that's not likely to happen to you. So I've ran through a list of just basic stuff that you can do. Also, some more advanced stuff. You go on YouTube and type in Tai Chi or Qigong, you're going to be floored by how much free, excellent coaching there is on these movement arts. You know, you don't have to find the highest guru from the most sacred land to teach you how to do basic movements. You can literally go on YouTube and just start mimicking people doing basic Tai Chi moves. You don't even have to do them right. All you have to do is just move. But the Tai Chi moves in particular have been designed over hundreds, if not thousands of years to really maximize the patterns of movement that cause imbibition and nervous system relaxation. They've basically gotten movement to a fine art, and not movement for the purpose of like bodybuilding or bulk development, but movement for the purpose of meditation, relaxation, qi cultivation, and really just stimulating the body's healing processes. So strongly suggest getting into that. It's super powerful stuff. Pick up some hobbies that require pumping. Like one of my favorite things to do is to drum. I picked up hand drumming like 5 years ago. And when you're drumming, you get into this pattern of right, left, right, left. So I'll give you guys a brief little sample here because I'm right next to my drum. But you'll hear it. You can actually hear what I'm going to do with my upper body. Now, all I was doing is extending my right hand, extending my left hand, back and forth, back and forth. And what I get is a really, really nice, almost like a gait walking type rhythmic pumping effect. Not to mention hearing the percussion and tuning into the percussive aspect of life, the rhythmic, the long axis perception of life. There's two axes. This is a little esoteric, but I'll tell you. There's the long axis and then there's the horizontal axis. And our three-dimensional world is the horizontal. It's 3D time space. But the long axis is the actual perception of time itself. So you can only know space if you perceive time. So time and space are on different axes, but yet they're considered one thing. So with drumming and any percussive, even any type of music really, you're tapping into to the axis of time, and the tighter you tap into it, the less time is perceived. So this is why a lot of musicians, high-level musicians, can go into a trance state when they're playing music and almost in a timeless state. If you could measure their physiology, if you could measure the physiology of a Tibetan monk chanting with a bowl and repetitiously, you would see tremendous changes in the mental patterns, the alpha, theta, beta, etc. So I'm just encouraging you guys to get into drumming because I know it personally as a powerful meditative and pumping tool. Singing, another excellent one. most people could gain a lot from learning how to use their voice and learning how to control their breath and the projection of their voice. Not only would they gain at a spiritual level, but they gain at the physical level because the diaphragm is the single largest pump except for the heart and the body. So the diaphragm is the primary pump, secondary to the heart, of course. So by singing and just tapping into breath, you're tapping into the pump itself, directly into the pump. So try singing gardening, another excellent example. Now you can grow your vegetables, and gardening ties into our reduction in energy use. Anytime you reduce energy in the modern system, you're probably going to benefit physically from it. So gardening is another example. You go out, you plant a few bean plants, plant some corn, till the soil, adjust your compost pile, turn your compost pile. All of these things are part and parcel not only with a more active movement-based lifestyle, but by also reducing energy consumption and increasing the nutrition in your diet and your connection with really your biosphere, your other self, your base self. So gardening is another beautiful way of getting the movement in. So I have pretty much run through my short list of stuff just offhand, but again, anything that gets you moving, I'm down for. Some people get into promiscuous lifestyles because they love the motion so much. I'm not going to suggest a promiscuous lifestyle, but what I will say is that sex is great for the body. And what is sex? Lo and behold, it's yet another rhythmical activity, which if you hit the right rhythm, you'll have an experience. So that would be a vertical axis, another vertical axis thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of a joke. I'm screwing around with you guys, but I'm serious at the same time. So at this point, I'm going to ask for questions and just see if anybody's got questions about their body or movement, because I pretty much summarized really the main gist of the argument at this point and what I think you should do about it.
Well, we're talking about the office space, because I think that obviously you really hit on something there, that the office living lifestyle is not so good for movement. What do you think about standing desks? I've been thinking about getting one for my office, and I know maybe not everybody has space to have both a standing and a sitting desk, but I've been considering getting a standing one just to shift between them as a way of stimulating movement and to get up from the desk.
Right, to change the holding patterns of all your major joints.
Yeah.
So I kind of alluded to that by suggesting that you get an adjustable chair and monitor set. But the extending that logic even further would be to have a standing desk, which is a desk that you can literally adjust to a seated position and raise it up vertically to a standing. Some of them are just standing, but there's like literally 1,000 different desk options out there that you can explore. It makes a huge difference, but the problem with standing a lot is that we're not really designed to stand still for long periods of time. So I've found a lot of people get tension in their calves, they get back pain, and it's generally, I've found that some people find it more uncomfortable to stand. Now, you're going to have to play with that on your own, but generally the thing that we do when we stand is we walk. When you're standing, if you're there standing, I would encourage you to be kind of shifting your weight a lot. Try not to stand still, that's all. But, yeah, standing desk is another great idea, of course. But, again, the body is really not designed to stand still, but we would rather go into a squatted position or a seated position naturally, because what that does is it takes all the muscular effort away, and we begin to hang off of our ligament system.
Yes.
And that's more natural. If you look at people resting in tribal societies, they tend to rest in a deep squat position. They don't tend to stand around. Standing around is another hallmark of Western society, just like sitting around is. So I'm kind of trying to avoid either too much. I'm trying to get you, if you're standing, to walk, and if you're seated, to move. But try not to sit still or stand still.
I wonder if they make a squatting desk. I don't know.
Yeah, we call that the floor.
Yeah, right.
Put your monitor on the floor and get on down.
Yeah. that's
but even then, it unfortunately, most people, because they've spent their life seated, would be very uncomfortable in a squatted position as well. So it's something to work towards, but I wouldn't go out of your way to try and set up your office on the floor. Not unless you're a yogi or something, who you can sit cross-legged or whatever. But a lot of us Western types, we've lost the mobility in our hips and in our spine because of disuse. And that's another thing I want to touch on. If you don't use these bodily systems, they actually harden and shorten and try and make themselves more efficient. And another thing about movement besides its pumping effects is that you can actually maintain strength and coordination without even doing strength exercises or coordination exercises per se, just by doing basic motion. Because by being sedentary, by sitting all the time, you lose muscle mass, you lose neurologic connections and the ability to fire the muscle part. So bottom line is really just move. So did you have anything else, James, that you were thinking of?
I do have other questions, but I certainly want to make sure that everybody who's with us has the opportunity to ask questions of Paul and to talk to Paul about their thoughts.
Paul, I had a quick question.
Okay, I'm listening.
This is John from Louisiana. How are you?
Good. How are you doing, John?
I'm doing terrific. I'm very intrigued with the drum that you just played.
Okay.
It really, really resonated with it very well. I was just curious what it was and where is the place to find these. Or, I'm in Louisiana,
oh.
So I'm sure internet is going to be the...
Oh, no, easier than you think, my friend. Okay, the drum I was playing is a djembe. It's an African drum, and you can play it standing or seated or on the ground, so it's the perfect drum for all occasions. It's got bass, tone, everything. So it's spelled D-J-E, D-J-E-M-B-E, djembe.
D-J-E-M-B-E.
It's an excellent drum. You can find it on Craigslist, used. Most people sell their drums on Craigslist or eBay, used. Otherwise, there's music stores in every city. You can go to Guitar Center. I'm sure there's a Guitar Center in Louisiana or some variation, and pick yourself up a bongo or a djembe, and it's just at every level from the mental down to the physical, it's an excellent habit to get into. You can show up to a party, and if they're doing a little jam session, you can jump in. It builds. I mean, it's really taps into every aspect of existence. So totally changed my life. Now I got a drum kit. I've moved up to the full trap kit. So, and that's a whole other world. Now I got my feet moving. I got my hands, feet, everything's going at the same time. That's the ultimate in rhythmic motion right there, is working the trap kit. So thanks for that question.
Yes, I appreciate it.
Yeah. Are you having any issues sort of with motion, or are you a trainer, or tell me more about yourself?
I own several gyms in Louisiana and Arkansas, and I have been a trainer for 20 years and have been following your dad for, gosh, since the 90s. I think I was the first person with a Swiss ball in Louisiana. I still do my, I do some meditation and some that Tai Chi stick your dad taught me in probably year in 2000 when I first did the NLC. It was NLC then, HLC now. So I do that. I do have a low back. I'm about to turn 40, and hurt my low back playing basketball here recently.
Mm-hmm.
And had the disc bulge in the 3 and 4 and 4 and 5 and 5 and 1, and have just started getting back into trying to move more, using the Swiss ball. I've been, doing a lot of the stuff what you were saying. I guess it's from listening to your dad, but you had some good points, and I really liked the call so far.
Excellent. Yeah, and you have specific issues with your lumbar disc that you need to pay attention to, obviously, but
definitely.
I'm sure that you found that certain rhythmic motions actually help take away the back pain. I mean, have you ever noticed that? Have you ever noticed patterns of motion that help you with your back pain or
walking? Yeah, walking. I go for a walk in the morning. I'll take my daughter for a walk in the evenings. I notice that it does subside.
Yeah, and it's not magic because it only takes literally a few hundred steps to get a significant pumping effect in the spine. And when you pump the spine, you actually increase the distance between the vertebrae, and of course if you have any nerve compression, et cetera, it can help relieve that. As well as that, like I said, the afferent effect of all of that inflow of information from all of the different joints that are involved, as well as the sensation of the skin. And you are scanning your environment. You're walking down the street. It's just a barrage of sensory input. So, I find a lot of people benefit from walking, just simple, quick walks. Mm-hmm. So, excellent. Thank you for joining me.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
Yep. There was one more point that I have, which is there's a difference. A lot of people confuse movement with exercise. I kind of like to give my definition of what the difference is between movement and exercise. Movement is, or rather exercise, is movement that causes the blood flow to shift from your organ systems, your heart and your liver and your colon and your intestines, out to the periphery. And causes an actual stimulation of the adrenal gland. So anytime you do exercise and you start to get a heart rate or a temperature increase, you're now verging into the realm of exercise. What I'm trying to talk about today is movement. All the stuff I want you to do should not make you feel tired. Now, what happens in our modern society is because we're so sedentary, our ability to move before it becomes exercise is reduced to the point where just a little bit of motion is perceived by people as exercise. So they might get on their bike for the first time in 10 years, and they might ride 3 blocks, and they're flummoxed. They're just like, wow, oh my God, I'm burning, my legs are tired, and they might get sore the next day, and they might hate doing that. But the thing is that you got to keep the motion below the point where it becomes official exercise if you want to get the pure pumping effect, just the pure neurologic effects that I talked about. So a lot of people, unfortunately, avoid moving because they're so out of shape that they perceive movement as exercise. So just a little point of clarification. Now, I suggest pushing into the zone of exercise, but without pushing to the point where you get tired. So my dad talks about this as his work-in, work-out exercises. So there's work-in exercises, which are repetitive, very low intensity, and what they actually cause is a relaxation of the nervous system, as I described, and the pumping effects. A work-out exercise, as my dad discusses, is any exercise that causes the blood to move away from the organs, and you actually start to get a temperature increase, heart rate increase. I want people to push that boundary without stepping officially into the realm of exercise, where they're breaking a sweat and feeling like they're working. But I don't want them to just do so little motion or motion that's not intense enough to cause some sort of an effect. So you're really going to have to find that fine line in your activities where you're not going into exercise, but you're not also just kind of doing nothing either. So I don't know if that makes any sense, what I'm trying to say. But basically, in a nutshell, you should be pushing the threshold where your movement starts to cause a little bit of an exercise response, but not enough to make you, like, break out in a sweat or increase your respiratory rate. And you know that you're on that threshold, and that's where the body likes to be. And it likes to go into periods where it does outright exercise. But people often in our society go from sitting all day to then going into the gym and shifting their whole physiology really quickly, like within 5 minutes, from sedentary to, holy crap, I'm doing a whole lot of work right here. I got to change everything. I got to shift gears and totally go into workout mode, into exercise mode. That is often more stressful than if they weren't to do that. So I'm really encouraging people to ease into full-blown exercise if you're dealing with chronic pain, you're sedentary, you're out of shape. Just start with rhythm and then progress to outright exercise where you're being taxed by the motion. So that's about it for me today, unless I have questions. Just a quick little download on motion.
Yeah, well, I wanted to say that I had never heard the way you opened your class tonight with a discussion about the relationship between external cheap energy and our own movement. I'd never heard it put that way, and it's really fascinating to me. The more I thought about it, I have to confess my mind wandered kind of exploring that as you're talking, but it's fascinating to think about that relationship between, you know, the presence of cheap oil and so forth and what that meant to our own movement, that we're sort of replacing our own energies with those cheap energies, and it's led to, in a way, that sedentary lifestyle. And if you can cut down on your use of external energies, it means you're using more of your own and you're moving more on your own. And that's it was real eye-opening. I've never heard it put that way. That was fascinating to me.
Yeah, and it literally is that simple. You don't have to think about any of the details of imbibition and, you know, muscular waves and all that stuff. All you have to think about is how can I reduce my energy bill, my gas bill. You know, anytime you do that, you're automatically going to start getting healthier, because now you're hanging your laundry instead of drying it in a dryer. Now you're cooking at home instead of going out. Now you're walking instead of riding. I mean, really, the story of our whole modern society is literally just the story of cheap oil, and of course the technology to machine metals and to finely working instruments. So yeah, it's a trip. It really is a trip when you think about it. And God, I had something on the top of my head I was going to say about that, but it slipped my mind. Oh yeah. The other thing is, here we are Americans. And most of us are Americans, probably on this call. We're the people who literally came across the Oregon Trail. We literally took, you know, wagons over the Rockies and through the rugged Oregon coast and inland to, you know, we're homesteaders by nature. I mean, we were the descendants of robust people, even going back to the time of Vikings and before. The bottom line is that we have quickly gone from being homesteaders and very serious people who build their own houses and fix their own knives when they dull, and replace their own wheels on their wagons. I mean, we had to do it ourselves, and now we've really become a nation of people who are almost wholly out of touch with the physical realm. I mean, and I don't blame them. Looking under the hood of a car is daunting. Oh, cracking a computer case open and expecting to know what to do there is daunting. But if you come back to the basics of homesteading, just try and plant a garden, you know, find some fruit trees. Like right now, it's fruit season. How many on this phone call, you can answer to yourself, of course, but how many on this phone call have gone out this season and picked fresh fruit? And I promise you, every single place that you're at in the country, in the world, has some kind of fresh fruit in summer that you could find and pick. Here, it's blueberries, pears, apples, peaches, nectarines. We have cherries. We have elderberries. I mean, I could go on. I mean, I could literally pick fruit every single day of the week here and not pay for it. And it's like this all throughout America, except for the inner cities, of course, and a lot of the rural places. But even then, you can plant fruit trees. You can plant a garden. You can offer to help your friend on one every Saturday. But the point is that anything that gets you back into taking care of your own home and your own home environment will cause you to get healthier. It just has to. Your food gets fresher, your body gets stronger, you're outdoors more. Bottom line is that we are literally addicted to oil as if it was heroin, and the effect on our physiology is it's sedating.
Yeah.
So yeah, thank you for that, James. And that's, you know, when I think about these things, I extend it right through society and even into the metaphysical, so it's hard for me to not talk about it like that.
Well, it is, and I think that it's important to get at, and in some ways to get at, right, the root cause, and certainly one of the causes for our sedentary lifestyle, you know, has to be the ease with which we can bring things to ourselves now, right, the ease with which we can get other people to do things for us. We don't have to crack open our computer. We can get other people to do it. We don't have to pick our fruit. We can get other people to do it. And,
well,
and
we can now, James, but
right, yeah, well, that's
without,
the difference.
Without
yeah.
sounding crazy, without, you know, being off the deep end, I'm going to, my prediction is that as we go forward in time, we're probably going to enter a period where we might have to be more self-reliant. And the people who are familiar with what a cherry tree looks like and when it's in season, and what a zucchini looks like and how to plant it and when, are going to be people who are become very interesting to their community, possibly in the future. So not only is it a movement thing, is it a health thing, but we're going to have to go back to a place where we our food is more local. Our use of our body is localized. Our efforts aren't helping multinationals in foreign countries. I mean, we're going to have to go that way. So for every reason I can think of, getting back into simple homesteading techniques like picking fresh fruit and preserving it naturally, drying it, canning it, pickling it, whatever, all these little things that just seem like quaint little hobbies that some people do, these things are actually, from the physical all the way to the economic impacts, are all the right direction. They're all aligned in the correct direction. So I could tell you economically why growing your own vegetables is better. I can tell you physiologically why picking the vegetables instead of hiring somebody to do it is better. I could tell you spiritually why knowing where your food comes from and knowing who grew it and how it grew is better for you. I mean, there really is a, when you weigh an argument, you got to weigh an argument at every level of its tangibility. And this argument here that I'm promoting, which is to reduce energy use with just doing it yourself if possible, is really the right direction at almost every level. Otherwise, if you go the other direction, you end up with a society that is what they call vertically integrated or monolithic, which is where everything you need has to come from someone else and somewhere else that you don't know. You have to refer to higher authority at all times to get your needs met. And the hallmark of a society that's become hardened or it's become lifeless is a society where everyone has to get everything from higher-ups. And we're going that way. If you look at our agricultural systems, it's getting more concentrated. Big farms have more control over our food supply than ever. So try not to go too far off the deep end here, but at every level, it's important that you move more. And just by moving more, I promise you, you're going to change the shape of society. Society is literally an extrusion. It's a byproduct of our collective use of energy and time. And, of course, every use of energy and time has a movement associated with it. So if you just pay close attention to how you move and its correlation with energy use, you're going to find that, a lot of the things that I'm complaining about, not getting health care, rising costs of energy, political concentration of the executive, poverty growing, class separation growing, everything that's happening, and every single one of those things, all of it ties right back into how you use your body every day. Simple as that. If you start getting local vegetables, you move more, and the effect of the local vegetables and increased movement is beneficial all the way through the chain. So, yeah, I think that I just went full circle there, and I'll leave it at that.
Well, excellent. So I guess before we wrap it up, I just want to give one more chance to everybody who's with us tonight to ask a question of Paul or maybe comment or join in the discussion.
Paul, they John must be fulfilled. They're satiated. That's got to be it.
Well, I think I heard John. John, do you have a question?
Paul. Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm not satiated yet.
Well, I'm happy to feed you, my friend.
I appreciate
feeding,
it.
Feeding a man is one of the best privileges. Right. Go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to, I had two things, but my first comment was that what you said is so true. Here in Louisiana, in my town, a good friend of mine who's a business partner of mine, and one of my things that I do is did a huge blueberry farm, organic blueberry farm.
Awesome.
And has an organic farmer now who came in and is, we got an organic farmer to come in and he took up an acre and is doing a co-op. So a lot of the members at my gym now, we've, you know, do talks at the gym and have gotten a huge number of people. You know, out there picking blueberries, and he was picked out every day of the season. So if everybody could just get together and, you know, just talk and do like you're saying.
And you know, picked blueberries, right? Did you go pick them?
I picked them every weekend.
Right. So
it's a wonderful experience.
It takes you about an hour, maybe an hour and a half, to pick maybe 5 to 10 pounds of blueberries, depending on how fast you work, right?
That's right.
And so think about that. You're doing this low intensity, repetitive reaching, pulling, reaching, pulling, bending. It's just it's very low stress, but yeah, you're smelling the blueberries. You're around people who are of like mind. They like fresh food. They're really valuing this time of year. You're tapping into the seasonal element of life. I mean, I just can't think of any. I mean, right as we were on this call right now, as you were talking, I had a friend show up at my front door. You probably heard the dog barking. And she gave me an eggplant off of her eggplant plant. And it's just so special. I'm looking at this ultra-fresh eggplant right now. And it's like, this is magic. When I eat this thing, I'm going to chew it slow. I'm going to savor it. This is just, it's what needs to happen. Otherwise, we're going to end up basically answering to authority for every single thing we need. So I'm so happy that you're doing that at the gym, the whole setting up the CSA, because the gym is literally like, it's like the Achilles heel of the system, if there was one. If the system had sort of a point in it where the most change could occur, sort of the weakness of the monolithic system, it would be through the gym, because the gym is one of the only unregulated places still where people can go. You know, it's not like a doctor's office where you can get sued for almost anything, blah, blah, blah. It's, you know, really litigious. In a gym, you can pick up your food, you can get counseled by a coach, you can get personal training, you can get taught how to move. I mean, the gym is literally like one of the sort of the last or the one of the best havens for social change and positive changes in society.
Definitely.
And thank you.
Also, blueberry picking. You have to be focused too. You know, I was with my daughter who's 11, and you know, I'd look over at her and she was so focused, because you don't want to pick one that's not ripe. And
right,
you're just focused on this beautiful plant that's making these unbelievable, you know, morsels. It's really a wonderful experience.
And how do those bushes smell?
Oh, just being in the midst of them, you know, I live 15 minutes away in a small town, but a city. I mean, it's a 15,000 probably people city, and it's just right outside of town, and you pull in and, you know, you've got, I think he's got 20 acres of, maybe, I don't know if it's 20, probably 15 acres of blueberry bushes.
Wow.
And you walk out in the middle, and it's just a magical feeling. Especially somebody like me who was born on 400 acres in Missouri and moved to, you know, New Orleans when he was young, that just getting back into nature is really, and just you know where you're from, you know what you were made to do.
And can I ask you one more question?
Yes, please.
How much did you pay per pound for those blueberries?
Well, it's my business partner, so I paid nothing.
But how much do they charge per pound?
You know, I can't even tell you. I don't even know. You know, my wife takes pictures of his place every year, and he's a good friend, so I've never paid. I always go when it's closed, so I'm out there by myself with my daughter.
Well, I'll tell you how much I pay for him here, and I don't even know the people who run it, but we pay $1.10 per pound for blueberries peak, and they only open when they're peaking, and so you go to the store and you buy this little basket thingy. It's maybe a half a pound tops for $4.95.
Right.
You're paying just to get blueberries. You're having to run on the treadmill, so to speak, to make $10 for a pound of blueberries.
Yep.
When that same 1 hour, you could go pick blueberries for $1.10. So it takes you it takes you 20 minutes to pick a pound of blueberries. For 20 minutes, you could spend $1.10, or you could go to the store, and it might take you 1 minute to grab blueberries, but you're paying a multiple of 10 to 20x for that. So you really, if you really boil it down, you're actually getting ripped off by working for other people to make money where you can then go buy your consumable goods. It's really, the system has become quite predatory, and so I just can't think of a negative reason for fresh fruit and vegetables.
I can't either.
Right.
My last quick question for you is, because
okay,
I walk into gyms every day, and I see the treadmill and the elliptical going and going, and the same people doing it and going and going.
Right.
Where do you see quote unquote aerobic activity? Where is its fit, I guess, in our in our world. I mean, I know we talked about today about movement that doesn't go into that exercise realm, you know, the working in movements. But
right.
Where does cardiovascular movement, in your opinion, fit into? Because I talk a lot at these gyms, and, you know, I talk about to these people about, you know, just coming in like a hamster and getting on the treadmill, you know, and looking the same and year after year.
Well, the thing is that the actual cardio component of it, when they're pushing their body to the point where they're, you know, holding an increased heart rate and respiratory rate, that's really the least effective part of the whole activity. The most effective part is that they're simply doing cyclical exercise. They're just doing repetitive whole body motions that require all the swings of the body to work in a rhythmic fashion. That's really where all the benefit's coming from. But because people get this little aerobic high off of doing more cardio than they really should, they actually get addicted to this endorphin rush feeling that they get when they kind of push their body. So I'm really discouraged, like a lot of volume of, quote, cardio. I'd rather have people doing 3 or 4 times a week of 20, 30-minute just quick blast workouts where they're not, like, you know, they're not doing super intense weights, but they're just doing these stimulatory workouts. They're more like a single or double shot of coffee rather than, you know, a 32-ounce tall cup or something, which is what I would call, like, 30, 40 minutes of cardio. So you come in, you do. So my point is that I'm not too excited about the aerobic component so much as I'm excited about the pumping, the imbibition aspect of it. Otherwise, I don't really see a need for a ton of, quote, cardio, the ability to store lots of lactic acid and eliminate it, because, like as my dad talks about, that often coincides with higher cortisol levels and more stress on the adrenal gland, because it does take a lot of stress to hold the body in a state where it has to be ready to deal with tons of lactic acid and metabolic waste. So I would personally prefer to do little blasts of strength training and lots of cyclical drumming, walking. It doesn't even have to be, quote, cardio where you push it. You don't even have to break a sweat. I mean, I can walk a mile to my store and not break a sweat. Why is that? I'm not doing cardio. I'm moving. And that's why I try to say there's a difference between exercise and movement. What we need to do is increase the volume of movement as much as we possibly can without getting overuse injuries and without pushing our body into a state where it's becoming a cardio machine. It's, you know, preparing itself for some 5K or something, which never comes. It's far better to keep movement totally relaxing, totally natural, and just trust that the body's getting all the pumping it needs, the cardio effect, people get too much into the effect of you know, the burn, the cardio burn and all that. That's, to me, it's another drug-like kind of thing that people seek out. Just like hitting the weight so hard that you're just like wiped out after it. People get high off of doing heavy squats and shit too. I mean, you can go in the wrong direction either way, in my opinion. So, does that make any sense?
Yes, it does. I really appreciate your time.
Right on. Well, thank you.
All right. Hey, Paul, do you have a website of your own?
You know, just the only really thing I have is I'm not a big self-promoter. It's just my PPS page. If anybody's interested, I have a private Twitter account. I do a ton of research for this film I'm producing right now. And if you want, I mean, I can give you you can peek that. But that's going to be a lot of volume of odd quotes and twits, but you'll find it very stimulating if you're into the same kind of stuff I am. So email me through the website and I'll give you access to that. I keep it private, but for people who are interested, I'll show them my research.
All right, yeah, I really appreciate it.
Okay, and what was your name again?
It's John Riley from Louisiana.
Louisiana, all right, they need you down there in the South.
They do, man. It's bad. I'm
hey,
trying.
Yeah, but isn't it funny how 100 years ago Louisiana was like, you know, you would have been a hard worker. You would have been in excellent shape if you lived there, either as a slave or a landowner, either way.
Yeah, you're right.
You're going to be in top shape, and now it's just like a pretty butterball basket of the world.
Oh, it is a very, very unhealthy place. Great place to have a gym.
Excellent. Well, you know, your business is going to continue to grow for a long time, and I'm just really excited to hear that you're offering a connection to the farm at your place. That's the biggest missing link in every single gym in America is the connection to food. They've gotten so supplementized and corporate branded so-called food product intensive that you can't even learn about food at a gym anymore. In fact, you're going to learn the very opposite. You're going to be taught that natural food is inefficient. Really, the best thing for your workout is a cocktail of refined proteins, flavor enhancers, texturizers, emulsifiers, and et cetera.
Right.
So kudos to you, my friend.
Thanks, man.
Thanks, John.
Well, thanks again, Paul, too, for a fantastic teleclass. That was great.
Very,
very enlightening. Like I said, it's a very unique perspective I've never heard before, and I hope we get a lot of people to listen to the recording, too, because I think it's valuable.
James, you're the best. Thank you.
Well, great. And I want to encourage anyone that feels as though they could benefit from Paul's coaching to have a look at his mentor profile on our website at www.ppssuccess.com, and you can find his profile in the PPS Mentoring Services section once you're there. And next week, I'll be hosting PPS Business Mentor Vidya McNeil for the next segment of her Business Basics teleclasses, and she'll be talking about sales and marketing. Are they the same? So if you haven't registered for Vidya's teleclass, I urge you to do so, especially if you own or are planning to own a business. And that'll be on Thursday, August 20th at 6 o'clock p.m. So thanks once again, Paul, and thanks for everybody for joining us, and I hope you'll join us again soon.
Thank you, James, and everyone have a good evening.
Thanks, Paul.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks, James.